Everybody, and welcome back to No Fate, a Terminator podcast where we discuss all things Terminator, from the films to the TV series to, well, just about everything, and your fan theories. My name is Michael John Petty. I'm here with Tanner Radwick, my co-host, and we're going to be talking today about the first episode of Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, the pilot, which we're super excited about. The Sarah Connor Chronicles has been a huge part of us getting this podcast started in the first place, and it's one of my all-time favorite shows. It's actually in my top 10, and I'm glad that we're finally getting to talk about this. After all these months talking Terminator, we're finally here talking about what we wanted to talk about the whole time.
It's been a long time coming, and it definitely kick-started the podcast. I was on my second watch through, and just all these questions and ideas and thoughts were racing through my head. You and I were talking about it probably every day. So I'm excited to do it all over again. There was a lot of things that I had forgotten about when I watched it the second time that I got reminded of. And for whatever reason, I think I forgot a lot of them again. So watching this again for a third time, I'm probably going to have a lot of those same thoughts and questions. And it's going to be fun. I can't wait.
Yeah. Me too. So we're going to start off this episode, guys, with two things. I want to read the official description for the pilot to kind of give people a little bit of background if they haven't watched the show, which if you haven't, turn this off right now. Like, seriously, turn our show off, go watch the episode, and come back.
It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu. You can watch it there. If you need to rent it, you can rent it or buy it on iTunes, or I think you can rent it on Amazon Prime. You could also buy the DVDs. Whatever you need to do, go watch the show and then come back. Because honestly, not only is it worth your time, but it's kind of a disservice to yourself if you're going to sit here and listen to us spoil it for you. I know it's been out for over a decade now, but it's really worth it. So we're going to get right into it. So the pilot episode description reads, a modern-day warrior and single mom hides from a government out to get her and her teenage son. Woo! Very vague.
They don't even mention robots.
No, they don't. You would have no idea what the show is about.
Can you imagine turning this on and being like, what, there's robots? What is this?
And then you hear the bum, 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 and you're like, wait a minute. I've heard that before.
If anyone were to ever say, wait a minute, there's robots, I would immediately pop into their house and go, cybernetic organism, and then I would leave.
That's so funny. We reached out to you guys on Twitter, obviously, and we asked you for your thoughts of the pilot. So we're going to start right here with Russ's thoughts, the one Ruster on Twitter. Thanks, Russ, for tuning in. His profile image, by the way, I've known this guy on Twitter for about a decade now. And his profile image, the whole time I've known him, has always been a photo of John and Cameron from the show.
Oh, it's no
always
way.
Been. Yeah. So he's like a big fan. So that's great. Thank you, Russ, for sending your thoughts our way. He said, the Sarah Connor Chronicles pilot was a great way to reintroduce us to the characters and the story. It was a mini movie. We were introduced to the new Terminators, Cameron and Cromartie. First time we saw these characters before and after time traveling journey into the Terminator-verse, it was great. Overall, it was fantastic. So thanks, Russ, for your thoughts. We really appreciate that. Guys, if you are watching the show with us, send us your thoughts on every episode. We are more than happy to talk about them here on air, especially if you have any theories or questions. So getting into this pilot episode, Tanner, what are your initial thoughts?
Oh, man.
I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that hits me right away, and probably everyone else who would watch this for the first time, is of course you're watching these characters who you know and love, and they're being recast. So you're trying to like watch them, and you're looking for little imitations maybe of the other actors, while you're also seeing what they bring to the table that makes it new and fresh. You're taking what you like, maybe being hesitant of what you don't like. So that's mostly what hit me when I first saw this. It's fun. It's fun to watch this over and over again and see, you know, what Lena does with this character that Linda Hamilton didn't get to.
Yeah.
I actually spent some time and I watched some bonus features on my DVD disc for this episode. And one of the things that really stood out to me was when they were casting for this show, they said every person who tried out for Sarah Connor just did their best Linda Hamilton impression. And they said some of them were crazy good. They could be Linda Hamilton, but Lena had never actually seen the Terminator movies before. So she brought something new to the show. She just understood the character from reading it and from people describing it, you know, and she actually avoided watching it because she didn't want to do a direct impersonation, which was actually something that Steve Carell had done with The Office as well. He didn't want to imitate from the British office as well. But I like what she does there. And they also brought up that, you know, you can't have T2 Sarah Connor for a full series.
No.
For the whole time.
It's too much.
Yeah. She's so intense in that movie. And while that performance is fantastic and it doesn't feel too one-dimensional because you did see her in the first movie, you know that there's more to that character. You can't have T2 Sarah Connor for this whole thing. So Lena does a great job in having this wide range of emotions while also maintaining who that character is. To answer your question, that's what most stood out to me during this episode when I first watched it, was really analyzing these characters that I knew and loved. But how about for you? What stood out to you?
You know, from the moment I saw this episode, I loved it. You know, it's tight, it's simple, it's just about everything I'd want from a pilot episode of a TV show. And also, what's unique about this pilot, even so far as compared to the rest of the series even, is that it takes place almost entirely in the 90s. So it feels very much like a Terminator movie, like an era Terminator movie. And I really love that. Mm-hmm. I think there's something really unique about it. I think they did a really good job at making it feel and look, even with this desaturated look a little bit, like the 90s. I think they put a lot of time and effort into that, and I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. I also just love Lena Headey. Like, to me, she is Sarah Connor. Like, Linda Hamilton will always be iconic so far as the films are concerned. There's no question about that. But Headey, who, like, was heavily criticized by fanboys at the time, honestly, she, like, embodies everything I love and hate about Sarah Connor. Like, I love that she's, like, completely self-sacrificing, always willing to protect John, even if she has no reason to think they're in danger. Her constant paranoia, she would literally die before giving up her son, all of that. But then you contrast that with what I hate about Sarah Connor, and it's her inability to show any, like, genuine affection towards her son. To the point where John knows it's a Terminator on the phone saying, "I love you, John," in her voice and not actually his mother, which is a big yikes. Like, that's really messed up. And I think Lena Headey does a phenomenal job at kind of balancing those things and showing us, like, more into the mind of Sarah Connor in a way that is different than how we saw it in T2. Because I think in T2, like, when we saw under her head, it was mostly in the mental institution. It's mostly her under duress. But this is her in a very, how do I want to say it?
She's in a different space.
Very different space, very different setting even, with very different contexts. And I think it's really interesting how she portrays her reacting to her environment. And I just really like it. Like, I love her. I think she's the best.
Yeah. Well, and I think that says a lot about her as an actress, but also just it says a lot about their writing, too, because they write this script that really feels like you're seeing an extension of two, where you're getting a glimpse into what it looks like after they live together, kind of on the run, kind of in hiding for a couple of years. And, you know, they have these rules for themselves, and she doesn't want to get too close to this guy who she truly loves. She tries to write it off by saying, "I know you like him," to John, trying to say, "Oh, I know it's about you, and, like, you know, I'm cold, and I'm not gonna admit that I'm wanting to stay here," kind of thing.
Even though she has the ring on her finger, like, come on, Sarah.
Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah.
But it also feels genuine, and it feels like the same characters that we left in T2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I think also something that's interesting about the Sarah Connor Chronicles is it came about in, like, the mid early 2000s, where there's this era of, like, serialized TV is, like, just starting to become a thing, with shows like Lost and Heroes that still do standalone episodes, but they have like these overarching arcs that span almost every episode of the season. And this is one of those shows around that time that like first started doing this. Lost started, I think, a year before, something like that. And and it's just very interesting. And I really appreciate that. Like, the guy who created the show, Josh Friedman, he also wrote the pilot. His other work includes, like, Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise, the NBC series Emerald City, which was, like, it was based off of The Wizard of Oz, which is really interesting given how much that show or how much that book affects this show. And he also did the recent Snowpiercer series. But he loves Terminator, and you can tell he loves Terminator to the point where they actually brought him in to help with Terminator Dark Fate when it was developing. And so he actually has a story credit on that movie, which is really interesting because it seems like it probably went in a very different direction, but he clearly is like so passionate about it. And so when he writes this episode and the next episode, you can just see his love for these characters and his love for especially T2 right on screen. And I think that's what honestly makes this series so good, is that it was written and created by people who genuinely love the source material, and they're not just given the keys to this franchise and said, hey, go make this like Marvel, or hey, we need to do something with this or we're gonna lose the rights, you know.
Star Wars
exactly. Not to get too controversial, but yeah, no, and that's what really stands out in this pilot, is just how much it feels like these first two movies. And I love it. I can't say more about it, like, other than I love it. You know, there's a part of me that just wants to fanboy or gush over it, you know, fangirl, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's super evident that everyone who worked on this was a big fan of this. Of course, Lena didn't watch them, but she, you know, will excuse that because she does a good job in this. Yeah. But Summer Glau had also seen the films, and she brought up, you know, various points referencing what she had seen on the screen before and portraying that in her own way and everything else.
Thomas Dekker, who plays John, also, he grew up loving the films.
Yeah, he was a really big fan of it as well. But, you know, not just the actors, but the writing and everything else. It does feel like it belongs in this universe, and it feels like it was a proper continuation that had respect for everything that came before it, which a lot of people would say Dark Fate had no respect for what came before it, because of the controversial first scene with you know,
which ironically, you know, you see in the pilot of this episode, like this episode, you see the exact same thing, but it's in a dream. I think that just goes to show, like, this shock of killing John Connor, like, you can use it and it work, but you can't use it to just undermine or undercut everything that came before. And I think that's why people have so much harder of a time, or I guess maybe I just should speak for us. We have a harder time with Dark Fate compared to like Terminator 3, whereas Terminator 3, there's this idea that there is still fate and all that. Sure. And that's different. That's not where we left them in T2. But Terminator 3, for the most part, respects John's journey. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dark Fate, honestly, I just don't think it really respects John's journey or really gives credence to Sarah's either. And I think that's a very interesting thing. And that's why, even though the quality of Dark Fate might be better, Rise of the Machines might be the better film, or is the better film, I would say.
I mean, they got some tones right in that, but in terms of what kind of respect they had for the old and wanting to honor some of that, you know, it just feels like they were so determined to create something different that they had to do something radical in order to do so. However, by doing that, you know, they they relied too heavily, thinking that just the name would be enough to bring new people in, as opposed to recognizing that, you know, this franchise is kind of hanging on by a thread anyway, and by eliminating your fan base, you're not going to exactly have a good shot at that, you know, triple movie maybe you're going for.
And they made the same mistake twice, because Genesis was supposed to be a trilogy, and then so was Dark Fate. But But what this pilot episode does really well is it gets John Connor too. Like, as much as it gets Sarah, it gets John. And Thomas Dekker just does phenomenal work as John Connor. You know, he's no longer a boy. He's not quite a man. He's fighting against his destiny. He's overcome by it at the same time. And he kind of does his best to outperform Terminator 3's Nick Stahl. And he kind of continues John's emotional arc from Rise of the Machines. But what makes the Sarah Connor Chronicles different is that now he has his mom to play off of, whereas in Rise of the Machine, he doesn't. You know, Sarah's dead in that film. And so it's John by himself figuring this out. Whereas in this series, the pilot does this really well by blending these short and sweet moments between the two, talking about girls at school with this end of the world blow up, like John telling Sarah she has to stop Judgment Day. You know, there's these stark contrasts, and I think it's just done very well.
Well, and I like that they don't waste any time showing you exactly what that relationship is like, and also showing you that it's still very much problematic, like how you left it in T2. Yeah. You know, they start you out by seeing Sarah wake up, and she's talking with her fiance, who you discover is her fiance, and how John helped to pick out this ring, and you're picturing this cute family life that they have, and then right when he gets up to leave, you see her kind of like look distant, like you just know, oh my gosh, she's gonna leave this poor guy. Yep. You just know right away when you see the expression on her face, and of course it cuts to the opening thing there, but you know, it gets right out of the way that yes, this is still the same Sarah Connor. She's in some different circumstances right now, but and then just how she reacts with John when he wakes up and she tells him that they have to leave, and John wants to stay. It feels like the scene in the police car all over again, where she's telling him, you know, that he shouldn't have come after her and everything else. Yep. You know, she's running the show in this, and she's being what she has to be in order to make him the leader that he needs to be. And at the end of this episode, it's really interesting how they have this dialogue of John starts to freak out, you know, in a sense that this is all happening again. And, you know, for a period there, I think John was living in this world where he didn't have to think about it as much.
Where they stopped Judgment Day.
They stopped Judgment Day. Nothing else was happening. You know, maybe we avoided this. Yes, there's these weird rules I have to follow. And yes, I kind of have to watch my step. But I have a dad now, you know. I have this great relationship with a father figure finally. I'm going to school like a normal kid. And then all of a sudden, all of that just goes away. And he kind of panics, and it's relatable. And this weight of the future gets too real for him, and he has to beg his mom, please fix this. And her hesitation there, of course, and then she says, I will. And I like it. You know, some people might interpret that as, well, that's a weak John Connor. I don't like that, but I don't see it that way at all. I think as him being still a child in this moment, you know, and wanting to rely on his mom, who he, you know, has issues with, but he knows what she is. He acknowledges, you know, I'm not you, is what he says, saying that in his mind, she's more fit to take on the future than he is. I like that vulnerability. I think it's relatable for the character. And it also, in my sense too, it doesn't tarnish who he becomes, because I know what he becomes. That part of who John Connor is set.
Right.
We're watching the journey of how he gets there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. I also love the introduction of this father character to John, Charlie Dixon, who is played by Dean Winters, who you might know as Mayhem, or he's the Vulture on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Just all these like more comedic roles, but he plays a very serious character on the show. And Charlie, like, as the show progresses, and we'll get there, but you can see that, you know, John didn't know his dad. He tells Cameron this early on when he first meets her, or I guess their second interaction. But Charlie is the closest thing he's had to one. And for him, that means everything. And so to pick up and leave that is just so hard. And it's hard for Sarah, too, because she wants that for her son. You know, she grieves the fact that her son never got to know his father. And this guy was the closest thing he could get. And I just think that's really, honestly, it's just really clever. And it's something that is never done again in the Terminator films. You never see a surrogate father figure to John again post Terminator 2 with the Uncle Bob Terminator. The closest thing that gets to it is this, and it's just done very well.
It is. I like his character a lot, and it makes sense. And it's also interesting that I'm trying to think how long they were together. I guess he says in the show that they were only together for 6 months.
Which is a long time for John.
Which is a long time for John, with how much they move around.
And how much he bounced between foster homes when his mom was in the institution.
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
Maybe you go first.
No, you go first.
Yours is more related to this. Mine is a bit of a tangent.
Go on the tangent.
Tangent? Okay. Little Easter egg I noticed. Did you see what pulled up on the screen for when they were looking up her FBI profile?
Yeah, her alias is Sarah Reese.
Well, that part of it. Did you see the other part of it?
What other part of it?
They say under her description for marks and tattoos, they said there's a puncture scarring on the front and back of her right shoulder.
Oh, dang.
That would have been where the T-1000 stuck his finger through her shoulder in T2.
That's super cool.
So just little things like that, little things that they, you know, fans of the franchise, and they wanted to have these little details in there. And it's on the screen for like a second. I had to pause it and just out of curiosity look through what they had on there. But I was like, that is cool that they have that in there.
That's super cool. I love that. See, and that again goes to all of the time and care that the creative team of the show just like put into this. You know, just the pilot. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the show, I think, does a very good job of this as well, while also creating new and different and honestly very time period elements. Because you watch the show and it's very similar to stuff like Chuck or Heroes or Lost or Smallville or just any other early Supernatural, you know, just these mid-2000s era shows, mid to late 2000 era shows that are just very dated now when we watch them compared to the shows that exist now, but at the time were peak television. I mean, this stuff is great. Like, this is my era of TV. I love this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, flip phones, everything else.
Oh yeah. I think also something that this episode does very well is setting up the impending doom of Judgment Day, which is now set to go off in April of 2011. This series actually takes place primarily between the years 2007 and 2009, but obviously this pilot episode takes place in 1999. I think that's really cool. You know, at the time that made sense, that gives them a 5-year window, give or take, for the show. And unfortunately, it only went 31 episodes. It only went 2 seasons, but they were giving themselves a buffer. And I think that's a really smart way to set up your series. You don't want it to go too long, but you want to also give yourself enough time to actually potentially stop Judgment Day. And I think they did a very good job at setting that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a clever way for them to transport their characters also from where we left them in the 90s to a more modern setting, which works really well. And I think it just helps logistically, too, to have them more updated in the current setting.
You can,
which they did with Genesis as well. Genesis copied that.
I was going to say, you can tell Genesis ripped that off. Genesis actually rips a lot off from the show, and we'll see that more as time goes on, but it's very interesting how much they take from the Sarah Connor Chronicles and kind of make their own. Another thing we should probably talk about is Cameron, which obviously a winking nod to James Cameron, which is clever, and I love it. I didn't realize that when I first watched the show until like halfway through the show, and I was like, oh, that's why. That's funny. But, like, let's remember, Michael was a young 15-year-old who, like, you know, the internet was different back then. No, it was not. It was the same. And I could have learned that earlier. I just did not.
Nice.
Yeah. I love Cameron. Cameron's great. Cameron does a really good job infiltrating John's life up front. And then the rest of the show is super inconsistent with her ability to blend in. And it's really a bummer.
She's all over the place for the blending in. Gosh, it's hard for me to know how much to talk about in the future episodes. I don't want to spoil anything.
I know, we shouldn't. We should try and probably stay within the context of this episode.
Okay, I'm going to resist saying anything more about that then. But yeah, no, her inconsistencies on how she can and can't blend in. Because when you first meet, I remember when I first watched this, I don't think I anticipated her being a Terminator. I don't think I even saw it on the box art or anything else. So when she introduced herself, I was convinced that I was like, holy crap, this girl's talking to John. That's awesome.
You're like, Summer Glau is talking to John? That's amazing.
I felt just as duped as John did when, lo and behold, she turns out to be metal.
Her introduction, just running over Cromartie, is so classic. It's so Terminator.
Yeah. What a name, Cromartie. Where the heck did that come from? Do you know?
I don't. It's not in... We'll have to look it up on future episodes, because it's not said in this episode, I don't think, is it?
I don't think so. He just says his name when he comes into class, and they just accept it. But it's such a weird name.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to Google it.
We could Google it while we're here. But that's what he's called throughout the show, at least by the fans.
I don't even know how to spell it.
Yeah, Cromartie is an interesting character. They do a lot with him, obviously, throughout the show, and so we won't get into that here. But it's cool to see this Terminator just walk into this classroom and start digging into its flesh and pull out a weapon and just open fire, you know, open season on John. That's terrifying.
It's disturbing, for sure.
And it's super disturbing, and it kind of, like, makes you feel like, dang, I don't ever want to go in a classroom again. But more than that, it kind of calls back on your fears from the beginning of the episode, where John is at the school seemingly safe and he's killed in front of Sarah, and then you find out it's a dream. Well, now dreams are becoming reality, and that's kind of scary. And so that's really smart, the way that they set all that up at the beginning.
Yeah, it's and it harkens back to, you know, his personality and whatnot. That you get like a big dose of his personality right off the bat with his class dismissed line and whatnot. But he has an interesting arc too that we'll talk about more, but it's not a one dimensional killer.
No.
Yeah. And one of the things they talked about, their goal for this series, was they didn't want to make just a chase series or a chase film or a chase, you know, they didn't want the chase dynamic for this whole show,
right?
Because that gets old. They didn't want a J.J. Abrams this thing and just
well, it's fun. Have their characters, it's funny you say that too, because that's what most Terminator movies are, and a lot of this pilot feels that way. And I remember when rewatching it last night with my wife, she said, is this whole show just going to be a chase? And I was like,
which, thank God, it
no,
isn't,
it's not.
Right?
It's not at all.
Yeah.
They take the fight to Skynet.
Yep. And I think you have to set the tone on the first episode of, you know, having that chase sensation of at least there's a threat that makes them, puts our characters into action, right? You have to have that part of it. But by not having a chase the whole time, you're able to explore these characters so much more. As opposed to, you know, Terminator 2, where they are in a chase the whole time, essentially. And they're under this stress. And then that's where you end up with T2 Linda Hamilton that you can't maintain for the whole TV show.
Right.
So by slowing this down in certain scenes, you get to explore these characters so much more than you get to in the other movies, which actually makes me love these characters even more when I go back and watch Terminator 1, when I watch Terminator 2. I feel like I'm able to relate to these movies more because I've seen them, their lives play out in the future through this show, because I think the show does such a good job of maintaining who they are that I'm now able to watch the show or the movies that take place before. And yet I see Lena Headey. I see Thomas Dekker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I fully agree. I think that's a really great thing. One of the really great things about the show, also, besides, like, Cromartie and Cameron, which, like, also, side note, Cameron is obviously a very different Terminator, and we'll get into that as the show progresses, too, because she has blue eyes, she can eat food, there seems to be some sort of more underlying emotion going on, maybe. There's just a lot there, so if you're watching the show for the first time and you want us to talk more about that, don't worry, we'll get there, but it's not yet. We're not there yet, so just hang in with us and keep watching, but... There's other characters that are introduced too, like the FBI agent James Ellison, who's an obvious foil for Sarah and John and Cameron. But there's a lot more going on even there. And I think that's something that the show does very well, is it introduces all these side characters who, on the surface, you're like, okay, well, this is the guy chasing them, and this is the guy she's in love with, and blah, blah, blah. There's all these archetypes. But when you start getting to know them more and getting them invested in the story and they start understanding what's going on, there's so much more meat in there than what you think at first. And I think that's really great. That's something the show does very well, is it really dives into each character and really digs out every bit of backstory and information and motive and emotion that we can possibly invoke. And there's another character who's going to be introduced in a couple episodes that we really see that with, who's actually, I think, my favorite character on the show besides John. But we'll get there when he comes up.
Mm-hmm. I think I know who you're talking about. Yep. Perfect. Yeah. James Allison is one of my favorite parts of this show.
Yeah,
for sure. They kind of introduce him in this, and you know, I heard, it was described on the DVD on the bonus feature. They were talking about James Allison is our point of view of a normal person trying to figure out what to do with the evidence for the existence of these Terminators in this world. Yep. And he's trying to piece it together, and it gets more and more real as the show goes on for him. And we won't dive into that much, but
a robot
just
leg.
Having this, having his point of view is so great. And seeing that develop so much in the movies, they don't have any time to spend on someone who is exposed to these machines.
No. And the closest we get is J.K. Simmons' character in Genesis.
Yeah, exactly. So getting to spend some time with a character who's slowly having to be awakened by the reality of this is great. And I love that character. And of course, Ellison being a Christian as well, you get these different themes that you and I have talked about through the movies, all the Christian symbolism and everything else. So it's fun that they explore that more with his character as well.
I agree. Ellison brings a really interesting point of view to the show. Obviously, Charlie is our main civilian, but and so Ellison isn't a civilian, but he's, like you said, trying to analyze this stuff through a very logical lens. You know, it's not logical to think that Terminators from the future are coming back to kill your son because he's the leader of the resistance. And we get that. You know, John feels that. John feels that way too. You know, he doesn't want to be this messiah figure, and he even says that. It's just not a logical thing to think. And so, of course, James Ellison isn't going to understand. But there's just so much there that we have yet to explore that's just really exciting and really gets into the meat and potatoes of what it means for his reality. We also see the Dyson family again, very briefly. They're not in it very long. Mm-hmm. Their house looks the same. They did a very good job at doing all that, and it was super cool to see them again in this context, and for them to understand, oh crap, like Miles died for nothing. This sucks. It's just a really interesting concept.
And the idea that they lied to them as well, in terms of like making it seem like Sarah forced this on him. Now, granted, Miles' wife was there when they were at the table discussing what's going to happen and their plan to destroy everything. But the story, in terms of from the police report, was that Sarah was an extremist who like blew up Miles basically in this explosion, like forced him to go, whatever.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think the last note I have on this pilot, and it's something that I feel about the series overall, is Bear McCreary's score is like one of the biggest highlights. It's epic, it's original, yet it pays tribute and homage to the original films. It's just amazing. And Bear McCreary is just a fabulous composer for anyone who's heard his work. He's probably most famous for his work on Battlestar Galactica or Black Sails and stuff like that. But his work here on the Sarah Connor Chronicles is actually some of my favorite stuff. It's so good, and it really helps you feel the intensity of the chase sequences, which are also top-notch. There's just a lot to love about that, and I couldn't record this episode without at least mentioning him once.
Yeah, the music feels like it belongs for sure, while it also feels new and it's not copying anything by any means, but it does feel like it has the same themes and it feels like it belongs perfectly for what the show is trying to accomplish.
So, Tanner, do you have any final thoughts on the pilot episode of the Sarah Connor Chronicles? I know there's a lot we talked about. There's a lot we can't yet talk about because we're trying to be respectful of people who haven't watched it yet. But there's a lot here. It's a really great episode. And what else do you have to say about it, if anything?
I think we covered most of what I needed to talk about for this one. I'm excited to move forward with the other episodes. It gets moving pretty quick. I feel like after this one, the ball's going to get rolling, and we'll have a lot to discuss. So we'll be back.
Yes, we definitely will be back. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in to our episode on the Sarah Connor Chronicles pilot. We've been waiting to do this episode for a very long time. We're really excited to be covering this show. We're really excited to be rewatching it again, especially alongside all of you. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. So if you guys had some thoughts on the pilot that you had for us, definitely send them our way. We'll talk about them on the next episode. And if you have some overall thoughts on the show, once you're finished watching it, we'll probably do another mailbag episode near the end of season one of the Sarah Connor Chronicles once we get there. So season one is 9 episodes. We'll probably do another mailbag around there, and then we'll get on to season two. So yeah, we're really excited, and thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. We wouldn't be here without you guys. So that being said, you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you think about it. Let people know how much you love our show. It helps us get more listeners, and it really helps us get out there as far as being a Terminator podcast. There's not many of us out there, so any promotion you could throw our way would be great. You could also follow us on Twitter at NoFatePod and find our website, nofatepodcast.com, where you can find every episode, our social medias. You can contact us through that website as well. So thank you guys so much. Tanner, can't wait till next time.
It's going to be good. We have a lot to talk about.
We do. Okay, guys, thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, just remember, you are the resistance. See ya.